Mr. Makindo, reel 6.
And then doing, what would you hear and what would you do about it when you heard it?
Well, your colleague at your feet, you'd get yourself down and tell him what you were observing, what you'd heard, what you'd seen. He would wake the other chap up, if he was asleep, and tell him what you'd seen, and he would take the message down the sap and into the front line trench and tell whoever it interested, you see.
I see. Good. Now, another regular job which you had was ration parties. Tell me about ration parties in as much detail as you can. How many men would go on them, where you would go, what would you would pick up, how you would carry it back, details like that.
Well, the ration party would be detailed to go to where the cook's kitchen were, which was usually at the end. It was in a kind of a, on the edge of a, which had been a copse, but was nearly down to ground level, but a bit of camouflage, a camouflage barn and bit of any material would be put up to give it a natural hideout, as it were.
Okay.
And the ration party would consist of usually a lance corporal, few men, and the food would be brought up in dixies, large galvanized dixies, usually stew, meat, vegetables of some type, you know, and
would it be in the day or the night that you would do this as a rule?
Oh, usually in the day, yes. Usually in the day. Because the trenches.
I want to concentrate now on some of the major problems and discomforts of trench life. And I'd like to start off with the problem of lice. Could you go over that story that you told me last time, how about how you discovered for the first time that you had lice and what effect it had on you?
Well, during our first few days in the trenches, we were told to take 2 or 3 hours rest in some very fine dugouts that had been left abandoned by the French. French-made dugouts, very good, very deep, excellent job.
Yeah.
As tired as I was, yes, I didn't need any rocking. I got down and a ground sheet and a blanket, and got in 2 or 3 hours, very good sleep. All of this, I can say that, all of us was perfectly clean in our habits, and I don't think we had a flea amongst us. But on coming to after this nap, I felt very itchy.
Yeah.
My clothes irritated me, and when the sun came out later, I went to this latrine.
Yeah.
That I don't have to describe that.
Yes.
Oh. which was usually a huge pit, huge deep pit, with a scaffold-like pole across as act as a seat, and when one had done their effort, you took your entrenching tool and scraped the wall where the earth fell down and covered your deposit.
Yeah.
It was then that I was examining my clothing when I looked and turned up my trousers, opened the seam of the inside of my leg, and in such a short time, I found that it was running alive with a lice.
Did you know what they were?
I didn't know what they were at the time. I never knew what they were at the time. But
was it a surprise to see them there? Tell me your feelings when you saw them.
I was surprised. I knew the difference between blight, green fly, and but I'd never had any instructions of, or never had any experience of body lice or what they were, or bugs or anything like that. But these were actually body lice. And having a very sensitive skin, my sister used to send me Keating's powder, but that was no good at all.
What did you do on this particular occasion when you discovered them?
When I discovered it, there was a member of the Pioneer Squad came into this latrine. He had been disinfecting the trench, the small communication trench, leading up to it, with a cylinder he had and some white disinfectant powder, to which I was young and inexperienced and didn't even know what this powder was. He didn't tell me, but I asked him for if he obliged me by giving me a little. But I didn't tell him of what purpose I wanted it for.
Yeah.
And he gave me a little in an envelope that I gave him. And after he'd left, I sprayed, emptied the contents of this envelope down the inside of the seam where these lice had gathered. And having squashed and killed some with the back of my knife, I took off my vest and looked through that, and my shirt and the rest of my equipment while I sat there. And I'm putting on my garments. Later, I realized that the powder that I had used on my trousers was of a destructive, had a destructive nature to it, and was burning the cotton of the seam of my trousers, and eventually the trousers left me. And rotted the seam, and the trousers eventually came apart. Mm. I subsequently found out that it was chloride of lime.
I think you also went along to the medical officer when this stuff also started burning your
leg. Next day, yes.
What was his reaction to this?
Well, I went along to the medical officer because this had had burnt the inside of my legs, and my legs were very raw inside. After the body sweating, it had set the powder into a burning mass, which was burning my legs. And also the clothing.
And what did the medical officer say?
in view of my injuries, damage done to the flesh on my legs, I went to the medical officer, and who gruffly said, "What's your trouble?" So I said, "Well, I said to him, I'm lousy, sir." He said, "Lousy?" He said, "We're all lousy." I said, "Well," I said, "Well, I've never been used to it, sir." He said, "You think I have?" I'll never forget that. And he said, "What have you been doing?" So I told him. I briefly outlined what I'd told him, what I'd done, and he said I'd rendered myself unfit for duty, but of course in no way I was going to be excused duty, so I had to just carry on just as usual.
One of the other problems which you've mentioned to me as being typical of life in the front line was the problem of sleep. Well, why was that a problem?
Well, you always had something to do, you see. You were always detailed for something. That was the only thing that really did distress me. Lack of sleep, yes. You could go to sleep standing up. Yeah. You could go to sleep standing up. Yeah.
When you weren't on duty, and so it was possible for you to try to have a sleep, how would you arrange yourself, and where would you arrange yourself in order to have a kip?
Oh, in a dugout, if you could find one. There was nobody sleeping there.
These dugouts would be fashioned for this purpose, would they?
Not fashioned, it was just that you just laid down on the floor, you see. You got a ground sheet and a blanket on the top, and that was...
I see.
Yeah. But I was scared after a while of getting myself into this state.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was months afterwards before we ever got a bath, you know.
Mm. One thing which particularly interests me is, as winter came on, did the change in the weather make life more difficult for you? And if it did, in what ways?
Make life...
more uncomfortable as winter came on and the weather changed.
Oh, yes.
What was it? How did the trench life differ in the winter? What things became more problematical?
Well, you were continually suffering from cold feet. Cold feet. And socks. You would have liked a change of socks every day because... even though the boots were good, but I suppose it was perspiration of the feet that really moistened them and made them wet and damp, that it was really cold. It was really cold, and and men were continually stamping their feet, jumping about, and that is the only way that you can really keep warm, by movement.
Did you have any problems with rain and mud?
Yes. Rain slowed things up, you see. Rain slowed things up. Your foot, you got embedded in the mud, you see. Every effort, you see, to pull up. It required twice the effort that it usually did, see, to walk. And of course it reduced the pace by half, less than half.
Let's talk a bit about your experiences of coming under enemy fire. What kind of German bombardments do you remember most vividly?
I remember we were subject to... They were trying to, of course, to knock the top of this sap head in. It was obvious to them, after this G18 went up, that we had a mine top there. like a cage, as we'd call it on a coal mine.
Yeah.
And they were rather keen to dismantle it if they could. And we were subject to mostly lunchtimes this came on. Mostly lunchtimes.
You're subject to what?
Whiz-bangs. These whiz-bangs, they were quick-firing gunners. You heard it coming towards you as soon as it left the breach. Bang, bang. That's all you got. They were a fairly light shell. They weren't of heavy caliber, but very heavy explosive charge. Very heavy explosive and very destructive.
Were there any other kinds of bombardments?
Oh, yes. Another thing they used to send over to us was the lads used to call it a coal box. It was more like a coal scuttle.
What was that like?
You could actually see it. You could actually see it.
Describe it.
Like an oblong-shaped box full of explosive, and they used to say was charged with anything. Nails, scrap iron, anything to make any destructive part to it. And I think it must have been sent over by a catapult type of weapon.
Did that have a characteristic sound?
Yes, it had a very characteristic sound, because one lunchtime at the saphead there, where the cage was, one of the chaps used to say, "Bob down, Mackie, here's another one." So when it had gone, I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Here comes another one, there's another one." I said, "Don't tell me you can see them." He says, Of course you can. Well, it deceived a lot of people, because they took a peculiar course, and if you could see them, you wouldn't know which way to run, because you wouldn't know where they were landing.
What did they sound like?
A toplid noise. Like a muffler.